Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today we are starting by wrestling with this this magnificent but often overlooked paradox of history.
Right.
You have the Religious Society of Friends, who most of us just know as the Quakers.
Right.
And they're defined by, you know, quiet, unscripted silence, real aversion to formality.
Mm.
And yet this small, creedless movement has had this, it's just this wildly disproportionate influence on global history. Everything from the abolition of slavery to peace movements, prison reform.
It's an incredible dynamic, truly. And that historical stereotype, you know, the quiet person in plain dress, it really flattens the radical revolutionary heart of the whole movement.
It really does.
The sources we're looking at today, especially Pink Dandelion's amazing analysis, The Quakers, they show a spiritual tradition that was, and, you know, still is, turbulent, deeply personal, and just so globally effective.
Absolutely. So our mission today is really to get beneath that quiet surface. We're going to unpack Dandelion's core insight, which is that Quakerism is fundamentally a religion of process,
yes,
of experience.
Not doctrine.
Not a static set of fixed doctrines, exactly.
Oh.
We want to find that spiritual engine, that explosive 17th century revolution that gave this movement all its power.
Well, to even start to understand the Quakers, you have to begin with the one single foundational concept, which is the direct, unmediated encounter with the divine.
Right.
They call it the inward light, or the belief that there is that of God in everyone.
And that is just a fundamental spiritual reorientation, isn't it?
Right.
It means faith isn't about inheriting some ancient set of rules or just passively accepting a doctrine.
No.
It is, by its very nature, a direct living spiritual tradition. You don't need a textbook. You need the experience.
And what's so fascinating here is the sheer audacity of that, of that direct access. If you believe God is speaking directly to you, to the individual, and to the whole community when it gathers, you completely cut out the middleman.
Right. Priests, bishops, all of it.
You don't need priests, you don't need bishops, you don't need specific liturgies or even mandatory statements of faith.
Right.
Because their religion is based on an ongoing experience, it is, at its core, creedless.
And the analysis of this process is made so much stronger because of Dandelion's unique perspective. He's not just an observer, is he?
Exactly. Dandelion is in this unique position of being, I mean, arguably the world's foremost academic expert on contemporary Quakerism.
Yep.
He's a sociologist, so he brings this rigorous analytical clarity, but he's also a practicing Quaker.
So he's bridging that gap. He can objectively dissect the faith's history, its schisms, its paradoxes, you know, as a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
While also giving us this intimate, empathetic insight mm-hmm. into what the practice means spiritually as an insider. That combination is what makes the book so authoritative.
And lets him ask these deep sociological questions while totally understanding the faith's spiritual integrity.
Okay, so let's step back into the mid-17th century, because the origins of this movement are just pure revolution.
Right.
Talking about England during the Civil War, a period of massive political, massive religious upheaval. People were desperate for alternatives.
The whole religious landscape is fragmented. So many people were already part of what was called the seeker movement. They were rejecting the established church, looking for something more authentic, more direct.
And into this, this ferment, steps George Fox. And he wasn't some university-trained theologian.
Not at all. He was a restless, intensely spiritual visionary.
And his pivotal insight, the one that really changed everything, was this realization that there is one, even Christ Jesus, who can speak to thy condition.
And that phrase, which for him was a personal revelation, it completely recenters spiritual authority. I mean, why was this so revolutionary? Because it rejected the entire ecclesiastical and political structure of 17th century England.
All of it.
It denied the need for an expensive church building, a state-paid minister, or sacramental rituals.
And if the divine is speaking directly to you, then the Bible also stops being the final, unchangeable source of truth, doesn't it?
That's a key point Dandelion makes. The Bible becomes this precious record of other people's experiences with God, but your own experience, validated by that light within you that becomes the living authority. They basically declared that life itself is the sacrament.
And this radicalism, it very quickly showed up in these provocative, really dangerous actions. They weren't just quietly praying in corners. They were actively disrupting society.
Oh, they were. They were deliberately challenging social hierarchy, which led directly to brutal persecution. And you have to think about the physical acts. Interrupting church services, refusing to pay tithes to the state church.
And the famous one, refusing to remove one's hat.
Right. Refusing to remove one's hat to judges, to magistrates, to any social superior.
I'm still stuck on the hat. How did refusing to take off a hat become such a genuinely dangerous political act back then?
Because in that time, removing your hat was an act of deference. It was an acknowledgement of social status, of hierarchy, of human power. So by refusing, Quakers were making a statement. They were saying they acknowledged only God as their superior. Since they believed the light was in all people equally, they wouldn't perform these rituals of superiority for any person. And that defiance, it was seen as seditious. It was an act of civil disobedience that could land you in jail immediately.
It makes you realize that early radicalism wasn't really a choice.
Yeah.
It was the direct, unavoidable consequence of what they believed spiritual.
Exactly.
So moving from those radical origins,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about the practice that most people associate with them, the silent meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's maybe try to demystify the unprogrammed meeting for worship.
Right, because most people picture silence as just an empty void. Or, you know, passively waiting for the time to end.
Right.
But Dandelion describes it as this intensely deep, expectant, and active spiritual discipline. It's often described as centering down. So quieting the mind and heart to listen for that still, small voice of God. It's waiting upon the Lord, a kind of communal seeking.
That distinction is so crucial, isn't it? The difference between empty waiting and expectant listening. And then out of that deep silence sometimes comes what they call vocal ministry. How is that different from someone just, you know, raising their hand to share a thought?
Oh, it's entirely different from a planned sermon or some intellectual contribution. Vocal ministry has to be spontaneous. It has to be spirit-led.
What does that mean exactly?
It means the speaker feels this overwhelming, almost painful compulsion from their conscience to share a message. The speaker is just the instrument. And the message, this is key, it has to be for the entire gathered group. It reflects a communal discernment.
And this disciplined, deep listening,
yeah.
it extends right into their governance, which is maybe the most distinctive part of Quaker structure,
yeah.
seeking the sense of the meeting.
Yes. And if you connect this to, say, corporate or political governance, the contrast is just stark. Instead of traditional voting, which, you know, always leaves you with a 51% majority and a 49% disgruntled minority,
always.
Quakers strive for genuine unity. The goal is to discern the shared sense of divine will among everyone gathered.
But doesn't that radical focus on consensus risk a kind of spiritual anarchy? I mean, couldn't the whole group get completely bogged down if just one person is stubbornly dissenting?
That is absolutely the risk, and it relies so heavily on the role of the clerk, the facilitator, and on this principle of corporate wisdom. While every single person has access to the light, their individual insight has to be tested against the wisdom of the whole.
So what happens if one person dissents?
Well, the meeting listens deeply to them to try and understand if that dissent is coming from just personal preference or if it reflects some profound spirit-led truth that the rest of the group has missed.
So it forces them to slow down, to find solutions that the entire group can unite behind, which must mean those decisions are incredibly robust and deeply supported once they're finally made.
Precisely. It prevents action based on just mere opinion. It ensures deep integrity.
Okay, now let's talk about the famous testimonies. They're often summarized with the acronym SPICY, Simplicity, Peace, Integrity, Community, and Equality. I think most people see these as just a list of moral rules.
Right, but Dandelion argues they are something so much deeper than that.
How so?
He clarifies that they are not arbitrary rules. They are the inevitable social and ethical consequences of living by the inward light. They are the logical fruit of the core experience. If you genuinely believe that there is that of God in everyone, then certain behaviors like violence or deceit or social oppression, they're simply ruled out.
That really clarifies the connection between the sort of mystical core and the social action. So tell us how that manifests in the most significant testimonies.
Okay, well, take equality. Because the light is universal, it knows no gender, no race. Quakers pioneered radical gender equality. They recognize women like Margaret Fell as ministers from the very beginning.
And they were the earliest and most persistent religious condemners of slavery.
Absolutely. Their peace testimony is rooted in the belief that violence violates that spark of the divine in your adversary, which leads to this radical, often dangerous pacifism.
And the integrity testimony, that has some really fascinating implications for the marketplace.
It's one of the most surprising historical impacts, I think. This commitment to absolute truthfulness led early Quakers to refuse to swear oaths. They believed you had to speak the truth all the time, not just when you put your hand on a Bible.
Like it.
But you have to remember the context. In 17th century commerce, trade was dominated by haggling, by deceit, by the principle of caveat emptor, buyer beware.
So if they reject all deceit, what did they do instead?
They established fixed prices in business. This practice was revolutionary. It meant they couldn't haggle. And it established this level of trust and quality that, ironically, led directly to Quaker success in fields like banking and confectionery. It linked their spiritual integrity to commercial prosperity.
To really bring that testimony of conscience to life, we absolutely have to talk about John Woolman.
Oh, yes. Woolman was the embodiment of that tireless moral persuasion. He was an American tailor, an itinerant minister in the 18th century, and his conscience told him that slavery was absolutely incompatible with the inward light.
And he demonstrated this conviction not by, shouting from the rooftops, but through this deep personal commitment.
What Dandelion shares is just incredible. Woolman refused to use silverware or even dye his clothes if they were produced by slave labor. But crucially, he spent decades traveling thousands of miles, often on foot, just visiting Quaker families who owned slaves.
And he didn't denounce them.
No, he sat with them. He talked with them patiently, gently persuading them, often at great personal cost and exhaustion, to free the people they enslaved.
And that quiet, persistent work, driven only by moral conviction, it eventually persuaded the entire Society of Friends to abolish slavery decades before the surrounding society even got close.
His life just speaks volumes about the power of conviction when it manifests in quiet, tireless, outward work.
Now, it's important to note, this movement wasn't always so unified. Moving into the 19th century, the sources detail some significant schisms. It proves that theological tension existed even in a faith without a creed.
Oh, the 19th century was a tumultuous time, especially in America. It was driven by these wider evangelical revivals, and the most profound split was between the Hicksite and the Orthodox wings. It wasn't just a disagreement, it was a schism over the fundamental balance of authority.
We mentioned that tension earlier between the inward light and biblical authority. How did that translate into different approaches to the faith?
Well, the Hicksites really emphasized the radical primacy of the inward light, that personal ongoing revelation. They were suspicious of formal structure. But the Orthodox group, they were influenced by broader Protestant movements. They wanted a more defined Christian identity, emphasizing the historical Christ and the authority of the Bible.
So two functionally different religious expressions.
Absolutely. Which brings us to today, where global Quakerism is incredibly diverse.
It's extremely. Dandelion identifies that today you have the liberal, unprogrammed Quakers, which you'll find in the UK and parts of the US. They practice that original silent worship and are theologically very diverse.
But numerically, the largest group are the evangelical programmed Quakers. They're concentrated heavily in places like Africa and Latin America, and they have paid ministers, fixed sermons, hymns, a structure that looks a lot more like a traditional Protestant church.
So with such wildly divergent worship styles, how does Dandelion argue they're still a single religious society?
He says the unity isn't in their current belief or practice, which clearly differs, but in their shared lineage, their common root. They all trace back, historically, to that foundational revelation that George Fox articulated. The inward light is a spiritual anchor, even if the cultural expression is completely different.
You know, this entire deep dive is just filled with principles that have profound relevance for our lives today, even completely outside a religious context. Let's look at some real-life applications, starting with that practice of centering down.
In our modern world, with the constant notifications and demands, the Quaker practice of intentional silence offers a practical, powerful tool for just living intentionally.
It's not about finding some grand spiritual answer. Is it?
Not at all. It's about simple mindfulness, self-awareness. It's the idea of taking maybe 5 minutes before you check your email or start a meeting just to listen to your inner voice, your conscience, instead of immediately reacting to all that external noise. It can lead to immense personal clarity.
And the application of the sense of the meeting in the professional world is something I think every leadership team should study.
It is a game changer for conflict resolution and for innovation. Instead of relying on a quick, divisive vote, if you prioritize deep listening, especially to dissenting views, it forces the entire team to find stronger, more creative solutions that everyone can genuinely get behind.
It turns dissent from an obstacle into an opportunity.
Exactly. An opportunity to strengthen the final outcome.
And finally, that ethical mandate Dandelion highlighted, based on George Fox's instruction, walk cheerfully over the world, answering that of God in everyone.
That phrase alone, It offers such a profound framework for conflict resolution, for negotiation. It requires you to look past your adversary's actions or their status or their identity and connect with their inherent worth. If you can approach a difficult conversation from that starting point, recognizing the fundamental spark of humanity in the other person, it fundamentally changes the entire negotiation. It elevates the potential for peace.
For me, the most surprising takeaway is the power of that core maxim, let your lives speak. True faith is demonstrated through your ethical conduct, through your actions, not just through what you say you believe. It's the ultimate rejection of hypocrisy. You know, you become your own walking sermon.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, I think the most valuable lesson is the power of a principled small community. The Quaker story shows that a true spirituality, one that's grounded in direct experience, when it's consistently manifested in ethical outward action, it can have an influence that is just far, far disproportionate to the community's size.
Dandelion charted this amazing journey, didn't he? From a radical, persecuted sect that threatened the social order to this quiet, respected denomination known globally for its philanthropy. The challenge I want to leave you with, the tension that Dandelion raises, is this. Can a small faith maintain that radical, spiritual, and ethical edge in a modern world that constantly pressures it toward comfortable, conventional assimilation? That's something to ponder as you go through your day.
That is a profound and difficult question for any dedicated movement.
Thank you for diving deep with us today into the radical, living heart of the Religious Society of Friends.
It has been a real pleasure unpacking these insights.
I'll catch you next time.
See you then.